I'm in big trouble. People have asked me many, many times, what do you do in that moment when you really want to eat? And my answer is I stay as far away from that moment as possible. Because in that moment, I don't know that I won't eat. I am powerless. I can't think that I can sit across from the food and want to eat it, and I won't. What makes me think I could do that? I've never been able to do that before, ever. What makes me think I can do that now? So I have to maintain mental and spiritual health and my abstinence from eating things that set me up so that I'm never in that moment where it's me and the food and I hope that I won't eat it. Because I will eat it. I may not eat it today, but then I'm going to eat it tomorrow. Right? That's the disease too. Understanding how the disease works in my mind. Right? So the disease lies. The disease lulls me into false senses of security, thinking that I have some control. So the disease will say to me, you could have just one. And maybe I could have just one. And then I think, wow, I had just one. I guess I'm okay. So tomorrow, well, yesterday I had one, so I probably could have two today and be okay. And then tomorrow, well, I had two and I was fine, so I probably could have three. And by the end of the week, I'm eating a dozen. Right? This is what the disease talks about that in the big book. I can have one. Oh, I did fine. I had one. Well, then I could probably have another. So that's not fine. That's the mental illness in my head. That's the mental twist in my brain because my disease is a terrorist and it wants me to eat. And it will play with my brain. It will play with my spirit. It will play with my body. It will do whatever it has to do to get me to eat. And my job is to do everything that I possibly can do to not eat. That's like, if you break it down to the bottom basic, that's the basic for me. The disease wants me to eat, and I have to do everything I can to not eat. And that means taking things very seriously and understanding how this disease works. And it's been a journey. It's been a long journey. I feel pretty old. But, I'm grateful today that I understand more than I did before and that I'm learning every day. One of the things that came up earlier was this idea of, you know, what are some of the red flags or the signs of, you know, that you're going to eat when you shouldn't or whatever. And one of the things that made me think about was that I have to constantly be paying attention to what the disease is doing. See, I would love to think, well, you know, I'm good now. I don't need to worry about the disease. I'm abstinent. I'm going to my meetings. I'm sponsoring. I'm doing the deal. So I'm good. But the truth is, I always have to be aware that the disease is figuring out ways to get me to eat. And I always have to be figuring out ways to not eat. So in a lot of ways, the things I do today are not necessarily the same things that I did when I first got here. Because when I first got here, the disease was doing different things to try to get me to eat. You know, oh, don't go to the meeting. Or, oh, you could have one. Or, you know, these kind of, well, those things aren't going to work anymore. I'm here for 30 years. I know that's not true. But it can do other things. So I have to constantly be staying one step ahead of the disease. And that's the maintenance of the process, right? The process of recovery. We're not recovered. I am not recovered. I don't come. I don't do it. And then I'm done. And now I can go on in my merry way. It's a process. So maintaining the process and growing with the process, right? So I don't have to stick with the things that I knew when I first got here. I have to do new things because I can't rest on my laurels. You know, I can't rest on, well, going to meetings and doing a little writing got me through the first 30 days. Well, that is not going to get me through 3 years or 5 years. It even says in the book, and this was a big epiphany for me, because when I got to be 10, I decided that I was feeling sicker than when I got here. Now, I was abstinent for 10 years, maintaining my weight for almost 8 years. I was very strong in the program, doing a lot, and very active in the program. But I started feeling crazy, like crazy in my head. And that's where like the mental thing was starting. And I was at a book study and we were reading step seven. And the first paragraph of step seven said that the amount of humility that got me abstinent is not going to be enough to keep me going. And I went, whoa. Like it was like a hit on the head. And I thought, okay, well, that's maybe where I am. That the amount of humility that got me to this point isn't going to be enough to get me to this point. And I'm either going to have to move forward or I'm going to have to move backwards. I can't just stand here. I can't just say, okay, I lost my weight. I'm dead. Okay, I'm good right here. I'm just going to hang out. I'm just going to hang out. That's not going to work. So how do I get from here to here? And it set me on a new journey of a spiritual process of meditating more and understanding this recovery more and learning more and listening with a different ear. And all of that has brought me to where I am today. And today I can say that I am at peace. I have freedom today. I'm not in bondage of self in any way, whether it's obsession with the food or obsession with other people or what you're thinking of me. As a matter of fact, I've been talking for half an hour and I haven't once thought what you're thinking of me. That's pretty amazing. You know, because my first workshop that I did probably 27 or 8 years ago, that was all I was thinking about, right? What are you thinking of me? Am I, you know, are you liking what I'm saying? Are you? It's not that I don't care today, but I really don't care today. You know, it's like I say what I say. I tell my truth. I don't worry about that. So you get opportunities to see the growth. So I'm just, I'm free today. And if anybody would ask me, and people have asked me, like, what's the one thing that you got from, you know, you've gotten from recovery? That's the most important thing. What would it be? And I didn't even have to think about it. I said freedom. Freedom. Because nobody understands how horrible it is to be in the bondage of this disease other than other compulsive eaters. Nobody else understands what that feels like when you are so out of control that you want to do this, but you do this. You swear I'm not going to do this, and in 10 minutes you're doing it. And you're just out of control. And the obsession of the mind, the itty bitty shitty committee in my head that just is constant, I don't have that anymore. I don't have that voice in my head. It doesn't sound, you know, it sounded like my mother, then it sounded like kids who tortured me, then it sounded like, you know, whatever. But I don't have that anymore. So there's just huge levels of freedom that have come from absolutely maintaining my abstinence, clean, simple, clear abstinence, maintaining my mental health by doing the steps and working the program the way it's written, and then maintaining my spiritual health by continuing to develop my relationship with a higher power. And more important even than developing the relationship, I feel like the relationship is like an after effect of surrendering my control. And I'm not perfect. I mean, I'm really not. I'd like to think I'm perfect, but I'm not perfect. And there are times where all of a sudden I don't even realize it and I've taken back something. But with the abstinence and the mental health, I see it. I catch it. Before I've blown up my life or destroyed a relationship or eaten. And I've done all those things before I got here. I have, you know, lost 100 pounds and then ate one bite, 100-pound bite. There I go again, just blew it up, right? Or blew up a relationship or blew up a job or, you know, just blow stuff up. I don't do that today. I don't have to do that today. And I'm free from resentments, because for me, I held on to resentments because they gave me purpose. Like they gave me meaning. I don't know if I can describe it any other way. It's like, that's what I lived for. Like, you know, feeling sorry for myself and victimized. You know, I was such a perfect victim. Life was just happening to me. Well, of course it was happening to me because I was in my room binging my brains out, locked in my room. I wasn't doing anything. So anything that happened to me. Because I was not participating. So Nobody except compulsive eaters understands the bondage of this disease and how it absolutely removes any ability to be free. Both physically free, I couldn't do stuff. I couldn't sit in an airplane and put on the seatbelt. I flew in this morning, put on the seatbelt, and went and pulled it tight. And then I crossed my legs. You know, it's like, wow, I could even sit in the middle seat. It's like, wow, right? When I was flying and I was compulsively eating, I couldn't even put the seatbelt on. And I was so embarrassed I did to ask for an extension that I just put my pillow over it and nobody knew. If we crashed, I'd have been dead. Well, we probably would have been dead anyway, but I didn't have a seatbelt on, right? Things like that. So just get to really, really appreciate the freedom that comes with maintaining a recovery program. So that's really what I wanted to talk about today. I hope that helped. And I really would like to know what you guys, if you guys have any questions or anything that you would like to ask, you know, use my years of experience, please. So you can either write it down on a piece of paper and I can get it from you, or you can come up. I can start it off. So there's a couple of questions that people ask me all the time. So I told you about one. What's the other? Oh, the other one is that I get a lot. How have you stayed abstinent for so long? That's a big question. I don't know. Honestly, I mean, I don't know. I have a couple of theories. One is that it's absolutely a grace from God. It's a gift. I do know that if I'm working the tools and the steps to be abstinent, that won't work because it's not something I earn. I do the tools and I do the steps and I do all of this to reflect a level of surrender and humility. And as a result of being humble and surrendered, God graces me with abstinence. So it is a gift and I know that. But the one thing I will say is that I do continue to work the program like I did when I was desperate without having to be desperate. I can't necessarily tell you how to do that. I just know that for me, I don't live in desperation today, but I work this program as if I'm desperate. Like, this is still life or death for me. And I do that by remembering who I am, remembering where I came from, remembering I could be back there in an absolute minute. I do it by speaking with people who are in the throes of the disease, so I remember how the disease talks to me when I'm in it, talks to me in a very bad way. It's mean to me, and at the same time, convincing me to keep hurting myself. So I have to remember those things, and I think the combination of those has allowed me to stay abstinent for as long as I have. But I don't really know, and I don't want to take any chance. You know, it's like I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing because it's working, and I don't want to take any risk that it stops working, right? So I just every day, you know, I tell people one day is a miracle. You had enough days to get 30. You know, my first day, I didn't know I was going to have 31 years. Like, I didn't know, okay, well, I'm going to start now, and I'm going to have 30 years. No, I'm like, how am I going to get through today? You know, and I actually didn't wake up for about 3 weeks. So after about 3 weeks, all of a sudden the fog cleared, and I go, what am I doing? I'm telling people my food, and I'm like, but by that time it was too late. I was hooked. So I was like, well, I'm going to continue to do that. So any questions? Come on. Some question you're dying to ask somebody and you never have? No?
I don't know. I don't know how to ask what I'm thinking. So I've been abstinent 4 years. I lost 119 pounds. And then I was at, been on maintenance for a few years now. And at one point I was eating everything in my C list, you know, plus a little more because I could, because I had to keep adding not to lose any more weight. And then last year, for whatever reason, I was back at my first 30 days, but with a grain. You know, so I guess right the day after 30 days, right, when we can do that. And that lasted almost 7 months, and now I'm eating more again. I had to get it all back again plus an extra fat. So it was like, what is going on? I eat the same. I'm very simple eater. I eat the same thing pretty much every meal. It's just easier than trying to make something look like something I'm not supposed to eat. So I couldn't figure it out. And my sponsor just said, this is maintenance, you know, and my sponsor is fantastic. And she would just say, this is maintenance. Sometimes you lose weight, sometimes you gain weight. It's just, it's not the food. It's not the food. Just keep reading and writing and going to do the seven tools. But it still was the food. In my head, I'm like, how come I used to get to have this much food? And now I get this much food. It's not right. So I was very angry for a long time. So I don't know what the question is I'm asking. Mm-hmm.
I'll share my experience. How's that?
Yes.
If you wouldn't mind signing, though.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. So back to like the first thing I said when we first started about the definitions of words. So in my mind, maintenance meant you say the same weight every week, every year for the rest of your life. This is the deal. And I remember when I went to maintenance and you switched to weighing every week, and the first week I weighed, I weighed the same as I did the week before, and I said, what am I doing wrong? And my sponsor said, no, because I thought, because in my mind, you need to keep losing weight. Losing is good, gaining is bad. Those were my only two options. I didn't understand about the maintenance part. But what I do know, just from my own experience, I mean, I'm not a doctor, and I don't know, you know, all the chemical. I'm not a chemist either. You know, it's like when people want to mix foods together to make the sugar fifth or less, I'm like, I don't do chemistry, so let's, like, keep it simple. But I do know from my own experience that a lot of times my body has been trained to hold on to weight for emotional reasons. So when I'm going through something emotional or I'm in a situation that I'm dealing with that's going for a while, my body triggers, we got to hold on to weight for protection. I trained it to do that. I trained it by being a compulsive eater who ate and was fat for protection. I trained my body to do that. So when I would get through whatever the situation was, the weight would come off. So it's like there are fluctuations. I mean, there are obviously, you know, fluctuations in metabolism. And I know there was a workshop earlier about aging and abstinence or whatever. So metabolism changes as you get, but you know what? I can't even go there because, you know, there are people who said, you know, it's like, well, I'm too old to lose weight. And that's not true. It's not true. The truth is that you eat and what you eat becomes what you have. If you eat fats, you become fat. If you eat too much, you become fat. It's really not rocket science, right? So maintenance allows for fluctuations, but I do think, because I've had people who like plateau. I even plateaued in my weight loss part, and then I would give away my inventory and lose 10 pounds. I just feel like as a compulsive eater, I trained my body to react to emotional situations physically. And as a compulsive eater, the physical reaction is to hold on to the weight for protection. And I think my body was doing that. So I think there may be a flow of that. It may be worth kind of keeping track of when it's happened, the fluctuation is happening, and maybe what's going on, and see. And maybe there's a way to deal with stressful situations or emotional situations with a release rather than letting your body hold on to it. It could be that. Could be, you know, the other thing that I found is that your body gets used to certain foods and doesn't burn them up as quickly or as easily or as, you know, so if you eat the same thing all the time, which on maintenance most people tend to do, it's just easier, right? The longer you're here, the easier. I don't want to mess with the food. I don't want to play with the food. I spent too much time with the food already. So, but you start eating the same thing all the time, your body starts to get used to it, and it doesn't have to work as hard. You know, it. I find that, so then I shake it up a bit. I mean, I don't go crazy. I go from this protein to this protein, and then do that for 10 years or something, you know. But but I have found that over time that sometimes the body just gets used to what I'm eating, and just a switch here and there. I'm not a big fat eater because I'm addicted to fats. Like, I didn't eat sugar by itself or flour by itself. I ate sugar and flour and fat together. Those are the things that I ate. So I have to be very careful with fats. My body's very sensitive to the fats. So I don't do a lot of that. So I think the fats tend to fluctuate your weight a little more. Like, if you add a fat, your weight's going to go up, right? As if you add broccoli, it's probably not going to go up. So it's things like that. But the other piece I wanted to just respond to is the mental part, right? It's a lot easier to add food than it is to give food away and to go back. So when I'm working with people and we have to add food, I do it very, very gradually, like very gradually, like one little thing for weeks. Unless, you know, they're like losing so fast that they're going to waste away. But because otherwise you do it too fast, and then now you have to lose weight. So now you got to take food away. And the whole point of this is to stay out of the food and not spend too much time with the food, right? And worrying about and trying to control and manipulate the food. You know, I know we all want to do that. What can I eat to make me lose faster? What can I eat to, you know, to manipulate the result that I want? And that's why I said early on, that's not my business. Like, I just have to follow the food plan, right? I have to follow. Within the food plan, I can make certain choices. But I'm not on I'm not on a diet, as we call a diet, where it's all about that. So I understand that, and I think it does settle down. I definitely had the fluctuations in the middle years, in the last probably 10 or 12 years. Except I will say, in COVID, I did drop a little bit of weight. I don't know if, you know, everyone else had the COVID 20 or the COVID 50 or whatever, you know, and people in program just went, you know, it's like, so this is a miracle. This is a miracle program. So thank you for your question. Amaris.
Hi, I'm Amaris, compulsive eater.
Hi, Amaris.
I've never had that happen before.
She's a Zoom girl.
I'm a Zoom person. Okay, so my question is, how do you spread the message or attract other compulsive eaters after being in maintenance for your amount of time, like meeting new people and they've only known you in your maintenance?
That is a good question. Yeah, you said that is a really good question. So, I believe that what you're asking is, when you're first in and you're losing weight, people notice. And people ask you what you're doing. How are you losing weight? What's happening? And I did get some of that. Not a lot, mainly because I was an isolator. So I didn't know that many people. And I didn't see that many people. So I didn't have that much opportunity for that. But what I did find, which is interesting, it's a very good question. What I did find is that, separate from the weight loss, which I didn't get a lot of attention for, like I said, because I didn't know, I got a lot of questions, and a lot of people were attracted to how I was dealing with life. So, for example, if a situation was happening and I'm not going crazy and I'm not screaming and I'm not doing, you know, it's like the way we deal and the way we live in a peaceful, serene, calm way, that is very attractive to people. Very attractive. And I've had many, many people approach me about that way more than about my weight loss. So after being in maintenance, and they never knew me fat and all of that, but they say to me, you know, I love to talk to you because you're so calm and you're so serene. How do you do that? Like, and then I get an opportunity to say that, you know, I get to work on my mental health and you know, not being upset about things and not, you know, doing, and how do I do that? Because I keep my food clean or whatever. And it just starts a conversation. So it's an interesting question, because I remember when I first got into the program, so I grew up with a mother who hated fat people. It was not a good combination since I was a fat kid. So a lot of times the attempt to lose weight was for her approval, which I was never able to do and never got. When I started this program and I had a couple of months, I was speaking with my sister, and she said something about, I can't remember exactly, but something to the effect of, you know, once you lose the weight, you know, and mom isn't going to like be commenting on how great you're doing or whatever, what's going to keep you doing it? I thought that was a very interesting question. Now, granted, my mother never said good job or, you know, even noticed when I was losing weight. She just tried to sabotage me because she was not mentally well. But it was the first time. I had a couple of months in the program where I really realized that there's more to this than just losing weight. And then I was able to carry that out. You know, it's like it's attraction, not promotion. But it's not just attraction of losing weight. It's attraction of how I live my life. I live my life flying here this morning from Las Vegas. We had an hour delay on the tarmac. So the guy comes on the announcement and says, I'm so sorry, but it's going to be an hour delay. We're just going to have to sit here. And so many people are like, oh, shit. Oh, my God. Or just like what you did, right? It's like, oh, horrible. And I said, I meditated for an hour, you know? And it's like I get to be the calm in any situation. And people find that attractive. So, yes, I'm probably, you know, not getting a lot of questions because most people I meet today didn't know me fat. Now, I do carry my pictures, and hopefully someone has my pictures. So I do carry my pictures, and I whip them out whenever, you know, the topic comes up. I'm happy to show. But I do think that just like recovery is more than just the food and the weight loss, that the ability to be an attraction and to put an energy out in the universe. I mean, we're having a tough time in the world right now. And I always feel like we 12-steppers get to put out in the universe love and forgiveness and support and acceptance out in the universe. And you never know where that's going to float and what that's going to do, right? And maybe that gets to be an attraction for people, and maybe it starts to change how people think, you know? So I do think that this opportunity, which compulsive eating gave me to live differently, does set up an attraction out in the world. It may not be one-on-one where someone comes up to me and says, oh my God, you look so great, you lost all this weight, how did you do it? But it may be somebody who sees me meditating on an airplane and calms down or decides, you know, it's not that big a deal. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I feel like that's a lot of our purpose as well. It's not just about, I mean, obviously we want to help compulsive eaters who are suffering, but there's other, you know, there's other attractions as well. So, but thanks, that was a really good question. Thank you. And, you know, and the truth is that there are a lot of people who suffer from compulsive eating who don't have 100 pounds of weight to lose. I remember I walked into a meeting and the person sitting in the speaker's chair was this cute, tiny, thin, little, gorgeous girl. And I thought, what is this bitch going to talk to me about? Like, what is she going to be able to tell me about compulsive eating? I mean, that's how I thought about it, because I always thought compulsive eaters are fat, right? And then she proceeded to tell her story, and I was sobbing, and I related to every word she said. So it's not just about the weight, right? It's about how we feel and how we think and what we do and how we engage. So very important that once you're on maintenance and maintaining your weight loss, the recovery doesn't stop. I feel like that's where it kicks into the next year, where it's about really changing your life and then changing the life of people around you. You know, it's like my husband, I don't know if he's a compulsive eater or not. He eats what he wants to eat. He's fine. But, you know, I'll say stuff that are important to me, and then all of a sudden he says, so I always say certain sayings, and one day we go out to eat and he's eating a meal and he doesn't really like it, and so he doesn't eat it. And I said, you don't like it? He said, no. I said, do you want to go somewhere? He says, no, there's another meal coming. I'm like, I say that all the time. There's another meal coming, because they don't have to be perfect meals, right? At the beginning, I was like, I have to get like the perfect meal because I don't get to eat again for 4 hours. And, you know, today it's another meal coming. That's what I said before lunch, because I know about these meals here at the conventions and buffets and stuff. They're not my favorite, right? So I just said, you know what? There's another meal coming, and that'll be dinner here, and then there will be another meal coming, so and then I get to go home. So, you know, it's like, but we get to influence the world. We get to influence the energy out there about fat people. We get to talk about how fat people have feelings. You know, my experience is that people out there don't think fat people have feelings. they just say whatever they want to them, and they abuse them, and they insult them, and they hurt them, and it's like the only prejudice that's still PC out there in the world. But it's not true. We have feelings, and it hurts, and it digs bad. I was walking down the street eating something, and somebody driving by in a car yelled out, "Fat pig," and then he just took off. Well, you know what? That hurts. I have feelings. They're way deep down inside because I've got 120 pounds around me. So, you know, I think that we get an opportunity when we're in the maintenance part of maintaining a certain lifestyle and a certain way that we interact with the world to change the world one person at a time. It's so amazing. Because really, the world only changes one person at a time. That's the only thing that really works, right? So we get to do that, and we get to do that, and I get to do that because I'm a compulsive eater, and I had to be here in order not to die. And I have to continue to maintain this life so that I don't die. And as a result of that, I get to be the change in the world. I get to be an attraction on how to live in the world in a different way. That doesn't mean it affects everybody. Everybody's got their thing, but it's an amazing gift that we all have and an opportunity. It's not just about, I want to lose weight so I can fit into jeans. I mean, it was that for a minute. And then I put on the jeans and I cried and then it was done. But, you know, it's like at some point it becomes bigger than that, you know? And that's why maintenance to me is so important, because I feel a responsibility to give back and to engage in a way that makes the world better. Because, you know, I suffered a lot. I suffered a lot. I suffered at the hands of other kids that were, I mean, way before bullying was a thing, I was being bullied, right? Now all of a sudden it's like, no, you know, they don't allow bullying. Well, then, you know, I was tortured. And, you know, so all of these things that we get to then kind of go full circle, and I get to, I have grandbabies who are 8 and 10, and I get to be kind and not bully them, and I get to be loving. I didn't have that. And we get an opportunity to do that because we're maintaining this recovery. It's really cool. And then we have babies that are born in abstinence and that get abstinent parents. So maybe a new generation can do things different. It's so amazing. It's so exciting. This is why I love maintenance, right? It's because it means life. It's a life. I get to maintain a life. You lose the weight, you come in, you stay absent, you're going to lose the weight. 6 months, 9 months, a year, whatever. But then it's the exciting part, right? Where you get to like live like a good life, and you get to be the person you want to be that you were always supposed to be. So we have a few more minutes. If anybody has another question that they would like to ask or comment, or anybody has anything they want to share. No? You're all very quiet. Is it dinner time or what? What's happening here? Oh, God, it's nap time. I hear you. Yes. Okay, well, we can wrap it up then. If nobody has anything else they want to say, all my Las Vegas friends are in big trouble because none of them said anything. Nothing. So, but that's okay. LB, thank you.
LB, compulsive eater, Las Vegas, sorry. So I want to share one thing for me that really worked. I don't understand why it works. It's a maintenance thing, kind of, sort of, but what happened for me was I hit maintenance weight pretty fast. And my demon was getting hungry. That was always my demon. I'd get hungry at midnight, crazy hungry. I never understood it. And for me, what helped was service. I started working on service because it was well-received by my group. And the more service I did, the less hungry I got. And I have no idea why that worked, but it totally nailed it for me. And so the demon went away. I'm not getting hungry anymore. And I'm still doing service. That formula for me totally works. I don't know what the relationship is. I just know for me it works. It was kind of magic. So that's all I want to say. Thank you.
Please sign. Thank you, LB. Sure.
So if you're waiting, Donna T. San Diego, if you're waiting for somebody to make a big deal about you losing weight and, you know, make you feel good, I was morbidly obese for 12 years, and my mother nagged at me all the time, lose weight, lose weight. I finally lost the weight. She got Alzheimer's and couldn't remember I was fat.
She signed earlier. Yeah. I know, I've found for me, and thank you, LB and Bud, whatever I focus on gets bigger. So if I focus on that I'm hungry, then that gets bigger. If I focus on other people, then that becomes my purpose. That becomes, you know, because as a compulsive eater, my purpose is me. My purpose is feeding my wants, my needs, my whatever, getting what I need. I have, you know, I need immediate gratification. I need, you know, I. In program, I mean, there's a whole chapter called Working with Others. My sponsor had said to me, read the title of each chapter, because that's like the most important thing. So there is a solution, working with others, right? More about alcoholism. Those are the three things. So, you know, working with others, it makes, you know, it makes you feel good, and you makes, you know, and it's nice to be helping people. But what it does is it keeps the disease at bay, because you're focusing on something else. When I'm focusing on me, then the disease has a way to get in. When I'm focusing on you, or I'm focusing on something else, or I'm focusing on, you know, being helpful or working with other people or listening to other people, the disease can't get in. So it's just another way to keep the disease from getting in. And service is an amazing way to do it, because not only are you helping yourself stay abstinent and stay out of the obsession, right? Because this obsession in our head, because we don't just go, I'm hungry, and go, okay. We go, I'm hungry, I'm hungry, I'm hungry. Oh my God, I'm so hungry, I'm gonna die if I don't eat. That's the obsession, right? So staying out of that, you know, service is great for that. But also, service maintains the program. It maintains the participation and the growth of the program as a whole, so that it's here not only for us, but the people coming after us. You know, I look around and you know, with Zoom, we've gotten a lot more people and a lot younger people. You know, it gives me hope. You know, I've been saying this kind of as a joke, but, you know, us old timers, we're not going to be here forever. You know, and it's like, it gives me such hope that there are people coming up after us, and we get to share, and we get to maintain the integrity of the program with people coming in, so that they can keep it going. And that's what Bill talked about. You know, it's like he gave up his control of AA with like the tightest grip. He didn't, you know, he was just too afraid that if he let go of it, it would die. And it didn't. It didn't, because he just maintained the integrity of it and passed it on. And that's what we get to do. And we get to do that by maintaining our own abstinence and our own recovery, maintaining the integrity of the program and what the program stands for. And that helps the people coming after us to continue what we've done here. You know, I mean, the program started, AA started in the 30s. It's almost 100 years. And the program is still working and still saving lives. It's a miracle. We're all miracles. So I really appreciate everybody being here. There's a little bit of time before dinner. You can go take a nap or something. But I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.